Greetings, programs and users. It is time once again for another episode of Old Nerds Drinking. I am John Patrick, the Master Control Program. Here with me in the Nerd Cave is Rogan.
Hey, what's up? Wow, that was really loud. Your microphones work differently than mine do, so I'm not used to the peaking and all that stuff. But anyways, greetings, people.
As is a somewhat summer tradition, we get a little slower on the shows when the weather gets warmer and all the festivals start happening and we got some stuff going on. So it's been a minute. It's been a minute since we recorded.
Been a minute. Not as long as it's been for my show, but it's been a minute.
It has not been as long as it has been for your show. But of course, we are old nerds, and today we are drinking.
Oh, God. We are drinking. Let me intro this one. Hold on here. I don't know where you found... I think I know where you found this, but...
Yeah.
It's Dewclaw Brewing Company Sour Me Unicorn Farts, which is glittered sour ale... ale brewed with fruity syrup, which means they probably brewed it with fruity pebbles, and edible glitter. But I am not seeing any edible glitter in here.
I wonder if the edible glitter just dissolved in it over time.
It may have.
So
I have edible glitter at home, and I know what it looks like, and it's not in here. So
July 4th, I went to Johnny Mac's, the local liquor store, where it's Wino Heaven. And I was getting some drinks for the 4th, and I see this, and I'm like, fuck, we gotta...
Oh, I commend you.
I gotta.
Yeah, even if this is terrible, I would have insisted that you buy it.
Now, I gotta admit, I'm kind of starting to dig sour beers. Like, I like Summer Shandy. That's a sour beer.
Do you like Lambics?
I don't know if I have Lambics.
I will get you a Lambic. We shall try a Lambic.
There's another local brewery that makes like a shandy style beer. Mm-hmm. But then there's Wyandotte Beer Company, one of the local breweries. They make a margarita beer that's heavily sour, but I mean, it's like a lime sour. So it's kind of like a lime beer. And man, is it good. I know some people don't care for it, but I'm kind of developing a taste for it.
For me, it depends which kind of beer. Mm-hmm. Like Framois, which is one of the ones that I'm going to get. There's a raspberry Framois, which is really good. I've never had the cherry, but we'll try it. So before we do this, do you want to go through the pour one out?
Well, hold on, because first we got to... sparkles may settle, swirl, or gently invert before pouring. Well, we didn't do that. Pony up for
it. Oh, there they are. Yeah. There they are. Yep. I see it.
Pony up for a taste of this glitter sour ale brewed with a trio of fruits, fruity cereal, and a swirl of edible glitter. A fantastical collaboration between Dewclaw Brewing Company and Diablo Donuts based on their famous unicorn fart donut. Ooh, and there's a scan and sniff QR code.
Yeah, I sniffed it. I did not scan it, so...
I don't know how you're going to... Yeah, but...
Yeah, the whole scan and sniff thing just doesn't quite...
But the sad thing is, it's been a minute since we recorded an episode, and there's so many people to pour one out for. I honestly don't remember all the people we're supposed to pour one out for.
Well, Julia Childs was one of them.
I know. Julia Childs has been dead for a while.
Was it not? Then who were we supposed to? No, I'm sorry. I'm looking like an idiot. Julia Childs has an exhibit at the local museum.
Yeah, the Henry Ford.
Yeah, correct.
The most important person we're pouring one out for today is we got to pour one out for my kitty Cleo. She passed away on July 3rd. Over the weekend, I noticed she was starting to do some behaviors that she wasn't doing okay. So we took her into the vet, and it turned out she was in liver failure, kidney failure, and pancreatic failure. So they gave us some medicine, said take her home. She just doesn't have a lot of time. And I'm actually kind of glad she got to go at home with her family and not in the vet where it's a place where she doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was
been there. That sucked. Yeah.
It was rough. The funny thing is, she's about 7.5, almost 8 years old, and they're like, she's an elderly cat. I'm like, she's 8. She's like, in people years, that's 50. I'm like, listen here, you little millennial.
Yeah, but I have a friend who has to send her cat over tomorrow. And that cat's like 18 years old.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I know people who have cats that have lived to their 20s.
Yeah.
My friend Phil, his cat Gizmo lived to be 22, And up until about a couple months before Gizmo went, he was the baddest ass thing in the neighborhood. We used to joke at like 21, it's like, okay, Gizmo gets his first beer now. the other important thing we need to pour one out for is we need to pour one out for MTV.
Here's the thing. Well, we'll do it.
All right, but so yeah, we're gonna pour one out for those. Let's clink. Prost. All right, let's see. I like
it. It's not bad.
I like it.
It's not too sour. It's just sour enough.
This is almost exactly what that margarita beer I was telling you about tastes like. It's that it's just tart enough that you taste like the citrus, but it's not like painfully. Yeah, it's crisp. I like it.
It does. It does taste like a shandy though. It doesn't have like super like this is something I could drink on a really hot day after cutting the grass or something.
Oh my god! Yeah, I'm actually. Shit, I might have to make more of this. This is good
stuff.
I could
sit around the fire and drink this no problem for a bad movie night with no problem.
I will say, I don't get any taste of donuts.
Neither do I. Well, that didn't surprise me, though, because the sourness does hit you at the end, and it kind of makes your face crinkle a little. But sugars and stuff, because I make beer. That's how I make beer. I make moonshine. I make mead. I know all this stuff. Beer sugars don't ferment the same way that other sugars do.
Right.
So when you hear like flavors like donuts or when you hear things like caramel apple and things like that, they usually have to add flavors into that after the fermentation because a lot of those flavors are brought on through the sweetness. That sweetness ferments out.
Yeah. So, another elusive beer flavor is the toasted marshmallow flavor.
That's exactly, yes.
Like, I've had so many different stouts that said, oh, toasted marshmallow.
And they don't taste like toasted marshmallow.
Only one of them ever tasted like it. And it was
probably had the flavor added back in.
I'm sure it did. Yeah. It was that one, like, no label beer can we got from Discount Drinks and Wine.
Oh, on the shelf where the beers go to die?
Well, yeah. It was they had custom made like a run of them for Christmas, and I think it was like May and we got it.
Yeah.
Or no, it might have been closer to Christmas because I think it was when we were looking for the milkshake stouts of Christmas and I got that.
I also, you know what, now it popped in my head. I do got a son went out to our brother in podcasting, Jacob.
Oh, yeah.
He lost one of his pets yesterday, actually. So belated, pour one out for that one, too.
We pour one out for all pets. For when their time is done, the Valkyries carry them across the Rainbow Bridge to Valhalla to be brought to the mead halls of Odin, where they will join the Einherjar, the honored dead. And when Heimdall sounds the Galadriel horn to signal the time of Ragnarok, all of our pets will come back across the Bifrost to Midgard to join in the last battle.
Salute. I could totally see your cat being in the battle.
Oh, yeah. Cleo,
because of the two cats, Cleo was the one that kind of liked me a little bit more. She would actually let me touch her till like, nudging, you know.
But yeah, and the funny thing is, Cleo hated Sammy, our other cat. And Sammy kind of knew it and was like, I'm just going to go poke the bear because it's fun. Oh, man, and she was a bear. Well, that was one of the things that tipped me off that she was in distress. I went to pick her up one day, and she was a chonky kitty. Mm-hmm. The last time we had her at the vet, she was topping like 26 pounds, and I picked her up, and there wasn't much of anything to her. And it's like, oh, there should be a lot more here. So, yeah, that was kind of our clue. But you wanted to talk. We're coming to the part where we were going to pour one out for MTV.
Okay. Is MTV actually off the air?
Yes.
Because from what I was reading, it was just the end of MTV News. Because I get my cable through Sling, and it doesn't have MTV on. It never has. So I don't know for certain.
No, it is. In fact, the channel MTV is gone.
Okay. So, because when I looked it up, I got into an argument with somebody at work about it. They're like, you think you know everything? And I'm like, no, MTV's gone. And they're like, no, MTV News is gone. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like,
From what I heard towards the end, like, of 120 hours of MTV programming, almost 100 hours of that were just reruns of ridiculousness.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of when it's time to go.
Oh, it was time to go a long time ago.
Well, and I mean, that's the thing is I actually had started...
Plus, with the birth of YouTube, it pretty much killed it.
Well, that was one of the things. I had actually kind of started to write like a little eulogy for MTV. And it's like, MTV was born in an act of murder. When it first was turned on and it was announced, proclaimed that video had in fact killed the radio star. And now at its death, the video star itself was killed by YouTube.
Video star. Exactly.
But yeah, that's what it was. Is YouTube really killed it because that's where everybody was going to watch the music videos. It's like, okay, well, I could watch
the exact video that you want to watch.
Total Request Live and have to hope my video is on there. Or I could go to YouTube and just freaking watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, MTV is kind of like a core memory for me.
Oh, it is for everybody from our generation.
Yeah. I mean, we were literally, well, I'm in that weird spot where I'm a millennial, but by like almost a technicality.
Yeah. You're at the tail end of it. You're at the very beginning of
yes,
it. Yeah.
I am.
You just skirted under the radar.
The official start of the millennial generation is January 1st, 1980, and I was born January 9th, 1980.
Yeah, I was born 72, so I was a Gen Z.
Well, no, you were Gen X.
Gen X, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Which...
Tell her, Rusty.
Yeah, I was going to say, and that was the thing, is like, Gen X was literally called the MTV generation.
Yeah. Well, our generation was raised by TV. Our parents... We're like, I got to go to work. There's a box of macaroni and macaroni and cheese in the cupboard and find what you can find in the fridge. And TV was your babysitter, which means you would make the macaroni and cheese and whatever you can find. And you would sit down and watch episodes of Remote Control or The Real World or
Liquid Television.
Yeah. Liquid Television was amazing. But that was MTV was a lot of people's babysitter. That was, you know, a lot of people had makeout session. You know, there's a lot of memories through MTV from my generation.
Also, one of my big memories of MTV was MTV News.
Yeah.
Like, that was the first time seeing a TV news program that was, hey, this is stuff you kind of care about.
And it was good news about rock and roll and music.
I was going to say, and it wasn't just that. It was also other political news.
Yeah.
But it was kind of told. I mean, Kurt Loder was like an old man to my eyes, but...
But he was still cool, though.
Yeah. He had that kind of hip vibe to
him. Yeah, he was old, but he was hip. But I remember the original MTV VJs, you know.
Oh, who was your VJ?
Oh, God, I can't remember her name now.
Yeah, it the one with the crazy hair?
No, it wasn't. There was Downtown Judy Brown, but it wasn't her.
Downtown Judy Brown.
It wasn't her. Like, the people, Google who the original MTV VJs were, and I'll tell you, when I hear her name, I'll know it. Stupid of me to even bring it up without knowing her name, but I remember watching her all the time.
List of MTV VJs.
And I remember watching 120 Minutes with Matt Penfield all the time, because that was like... Because I grew up, you know, I was a punker. I grew up listening to alternative music and industrial music, and even
arrange them by years.
Oh, man, what was her name? It's on the tip of my tongue, and I can't remember it now. But oh God, yeah, none of them were. They were really just kind of wonky and weird.
Oh my God. So I'm looking up, trying to find the original VJs, and the original MTV VJs, where are they now? What website do you want to think that article is linking to?
I don't know. Pet House?
Oh no, sir. It's worse than that. It's AARP.org.
What?
Yep.
Oh, my God. The insurance people?
Yep. The American Association of Retired People.
Yeah, I got my application for my AARP card when I turned 50 last year. When that came in, I'm like, well, it's official. And now I'm like looking forward to the senior specials at Denny's.
Mark, okay, so let's see. The original MTV VJs, Martha Quinn.
That's who it was, Martha Quinn. That's
Mark
the one I'm
Goodman,
thinking of.
Nina Blackwood.
I remember her.
Alan Hunter.
I remember him vaguely.
J.J. Jackson.
Oh, I remember him.
Oh, my God. I just love the fact that it's AARP.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, well, they're up there. Yeah, so that doesn't surprise me. That's funny. But the thing was, is because it had never been done before, like, the people, they really, nobody really knew what they were doing or whatever. I was like, all right, 3, 2, 1, go, you know, off we go. And, but it was completely unexplored new territory, you know?
Yeah, it was, we're doing a thing, and they were kind of making it up as they go along, and slowly but surely it lost its way.
When did the real world start? Because I think that was the beginning of, was like really the beginning of reality TV too. I don't know, man. I would argue. Then they had after that, when they had the one with the Winnebago.
That was Road Rules.
Yeah.
No, 100% the birth of reality TV goes back to the only true reality TV show, and that's Cops.
Well, no, I'm not talking about that kind of a reality TV show.
I don't care. I will die on this hill.
Okay, I won't fight you for that, but like the real world, it wasn't scripted, I don't think. Well, at least when it started, it wasn't scripted, but they definitely put people in situations to make things happen.
Oh, yeah.
They would take a whole bunch of, like, horny college teenagers or, you know.
This is the true story.
And
true
throw them all in a house with a whole bunch of alcohol.
Oh, yeah. Unlimited alcohol. They were paid, so they didn't really need to have jobs.
Yeah.
Given
super houses and crazy exotic locations.
Right.
And I was like, okay, let's just stir the Petri dish up and see what happens. You know?
Oh, in more ways than one.
And then it turned into, well, now let's throw them all into a Winnebago and send them across the country. Now let's send them to Europe, you know? And after a while it was like, but those shows were, you know, they were cheap to produce. They didn't cost a lot. They didn't need actors. They didn't, boom, off you go.
Mm-hmm. God, I think back to like some of the, I remember being in high school and in one of my marketing classes.
Yo MTV Raps was another one.
Yeah. Because specifically when my class was the hip hop like hour.
Yeah.
So they'd be showing all the hip hop videos. And I wasn't really big into hip hop, but then I remember seeing the video for, what is it? It's the Tupac song.
California Dreamin'.
California Love.
California Love.
Where they're doing like the Mad Max Thunderdome remake.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, yeah, I can get down with this.
I remember watching an episode where they had Mark Wahlberg was on with, I think it was Eminem, and they did not like each other at all. It was Marky Mark, yeah. If you could find the video clip, like they're just like staring each other down, like, you know, getting ready to throw fists.
Well, I was going to say, that also makes a little more sense because I just recently through TikTok learned about Marky Mark's storied career in hate crimes.
What?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mark Wahlberg was apparently arrested on multiple occasions in his Baltimore early years for racially motivated physical assault.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That was something I learned through TikTok. It's like, oh, man, Mark Wahlberg, but you were so funny in The Other Guys.
They opened up that Wahlburgers, and I think it lasted a year, not too down the road from us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that opened and closed real quick.
Yeah. They actually, he came and did an appearance at the local Meijer grocery store. They still sell his burgers there, but they weren't open very long at all. Like, I think that was, and I might be wrong about this, but I think that was the first location they actually had to close down because it's
just... Well, and the funny thing was there were three locations in Michigan that all opened, like, right about the same time and, like, all closed almost within a year.
Yeah.
And I think specifically the one in Taylor, it was like people just showed up one day and they're like, yeah, we're closed.
That's pretty much what it was. And they ran an article in the paper saying we're sorry, they had said something about they were going to reopen it, and they said they missed the mark because their customer service they felt wasn't good enough. And then I think they just said, nah, we're just not going to open up in Michigan because it's not really the kind of thing place that's really going to fly here. So
it was, okay, so this is a little bit of local history. The location they opened it up at was where the old Gibraltar Trade Center used to be.
It's across the street from the next to Hooters.
So when they closed the Gibraltar Trade Center... And
for anybody that isn't from our area, there used to be this place called the Gibraltar Trade Center. It was an indoor flea market, and we called it the Dirt Mall. And it would be where you would go to buy like cheap stereos, ninja swords,
reptiles, throwing
stars, reptiles, cheap furniture.
Yeah.
It was just, I hadn't been there for like 20 years and we went back and it was still exactly, it hadn't changed at all in 20 years.
Oh yeah. And then they had the weekend special things where it's like, you'd have the reptile show, you'd have the baseball card show, you'd have the gun shows.
Yeah.
The city of Detroit, or the city of Taylor, desperately wanted to get rid of it because it was considered, Taylor has this local reputation of being called Taylor Tucky. Mm-hmm. It's a bit rednecky, and they were desperately trying to get rid of that image. So they demolished it, and they had all these grand plans about they were going to build this, because it's right by the highway, they were going to build this commercial area and get all these businesses to come. And that's when Wahlberg...
Which they sort of did.
Well, they, after 10 years of it being vacant, they built a Menards and they built a BJ's.
Yeah.
But they built the Wahlburgers first, thinking that there were going to be all these anchor stores that just never materialized.
Mm-hmm. This chain of restaurants, they opened in Michigan, and Mark Wahlberg's restaurants fell flat here very quickly.
Yeah, but, Mark Wahlberg committed hate crimes. Look it up.
Mark Wahlberg creates a hate crime.
But there actually is an old nerd's drinking topic that I think we need to discuss. It is almost time for the High Holy Week of the Nerd Calendar. Comic-Con.
Oh, okay. You know, which Comic-Con are you talking about specifically? Because a lot of them have begun to fold.
Well, legally, the only Comic-Con, the San Diego Comic-Con.
Okay.
Remember when they went on a litigation happy to say that they owned the term Comic-Con?
Yeah.
And they were making all these other cons change their names.
I'm very curious what's going to go down there this year because the blockbuster movie, thing is starting to collapse.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about.
The superhero movie, and I'm sad to see it, but then again, the movies are becoming shit. They're becoming mass-produced garbage. So
it was announced about a month back that Disney would have no presence at Comic-Con.
Yep.
Netflix had no presence at Comic-Con. Sony had no presence at Comic-Con. This is the first, I think, ever Comic-Con. Well, I can't say ever, but the first Comic-Con in my memory, there will not be a Media Hall H presentation.
Mm-hmm.
I think there might be some video games and some TV, I think Paramount Plus might be doing something. But for the most part, it's not like the old days where it's like, okay, people lined up a day in advance to sit and get tickets to Hall H for the Disney presentation or the Marvel presentation. No Star Wars, no Marvel superheroes, no DC. Warner Brothers isn't doing anything either.
They're really beginning to hold their cards close to their chest. And, Marvel stated it a while ago that they were going to start cutting back and changing production and how they do things.
Well,
and then
it was,
what just happened with DC with the Flash and that debacle, they've all come out and said, we're really trying to figure out what we're going to do in this post-COVID age now, because more and more people since COVID are like, I'm just going to stay home and watch a movie.
I'm going to be real honest. The only movie I've seen in theaters this year is I took the kids to see Spider-Verse.
But that was good.
It was good.
That was a really good movie.
I didn't see Ant-Man. I didn't see Guardians of the Galaxy. I wanted to, but I just never got around to.
Guardians was good.
And now it's like before, movies would be in theaters for at least a month.
Yeah.
But now it seems like it's 2 weeks, maybe three if it's really good.
Like Asteroid City is actually doing pretty good.
Oh, is that the new, not Wes Craven, Wes Anderson.
Yep.
Oh.
Yep.
I'm about 50.
And I'm told it's pretty good.
I was going to say, I'm about 50-50 on Wes Anderson movies. Some of them I love. Some of them I don't really get.
I never want to go see it.
I never got Rushmore, but I love Moonrise Kingdom. And, what is it? The Grand Budapest Hotel. I love that.
Yeah, see, most of his movies I'm not into. I just don't like them.
They're very quirky.
Yeah. And you know the movies that I watch.
Right.
So we've watched them together. So.
I was, and it's so funny because as we were watching Rubber, like, I kind of got the vibe I got from the trailer for Astro City. It's like, wait a minute, are these filmed in, like, the same, like, crappy desert town?
Yeah, it's very possible. But it's the industry's really like, what do we do now? What do we, you know, where do we put, how do we handle this? And I don't know what, I really don't know what Warner Brothers is going to do. I hope James Gunn can save it, but
I don't think Warner Brothers knows what the fuck they're going to do.
They got James Gunn. They're like, here, save us.
Please. But
at this point, because I went and saw The Flash, and I went and saw it. I will say that I went and saw it specifically to see Michael Keaton as Batman, and that really is the best part of that movie. And if Ezra Miller wasn't such a piece of human garbage, I would have been a little bit impressed by it because he actually did act pretty well in this movie. But
and that's the unfortunate
thing. That's the unfortunate thing, yeah. And for Warner Brothers to be like, this movie is going to be a blockbuster, it's going to be great. I'm like, no, there was a lot of bad stuff going into this movie. And I just went to see it because I wanted to support Michael Keaton as Batman. And that's only the only reason.
It was, from what I understand, it was originally supposed to be Henry Cavill in it. But the whole thing of his contract running out with Warner Brothers.
It would have been better if he was in it.
So they had to rewrite it with, okay, now it's Supergirl.
And it shows, yeah.
That's the reason I had no interest in seeing it was because I'm not going to pay money to go see this movie to know that it leads to nothing.
Yeah, that's the other thing. What's the point? Because now they're not even thinking about releasing Aquaman. And then there was they also showed Booster Gold, the trailer for that. But it was kind of like, why?
Yeah.
You know, who cares?
You've already said the reset's coming.
Yeah. Well, this was supposed to tie into that reset. They're using this movie for that reset.
And with the writer's strike.
Exactly.
So this is another thing I just recently read about. July 31st, the SAG is possibly going on strike.
That will bring everything to an immediate grind halt.
No writers, no actors, you got nothing.
Yeah.
We're
going to have a whole lot of reality TV real soon.
Oh, my God. And they barely avoided the IATSE strike, which would have shut down Hollywood. Like, you can have actors and you can have writers, but with IATSE, you got nothing.
See, the thing is, the writing is on the wall because I think most of the industry, they're going to start pulling back from these huge blockbusters and movies because most people want to stay home and watch these things at home now. And, you know, if it's done right, it works really well.
Which we've seen with the Disney stuff.
Disney's 50-50, but by the same token, that's the way, because it's easier to do that. And plus, the stories are drawn out more. They're told a bit, except for Obi-Wan Kenobi. But there's a little bit more work and stuff. I enjoy watching 10 episodes rather than a two-hour movie.
Yeah, I miss kind of that appointment television. I miss being able to sit, watch an episode, and then get to think about that episode for a week.
Yeah, it builds characters better. Like, even with, not to cut you off, but...
No, go ahead.
With the Into the Spider-Verse, the second one, even while I was watching that, I was like, this feels rushed. It was good, but me and the wife were sitting there, we're like, this has got to be ending soon, and all of a sudden it just ended the way it ended, which was fine, but by the same token, I've gotten so used to watching these stories.
Here's the funny thing. Usually when they do that, you know it's leading into, like, a part two.
Yeah.
Like, when as much as I loathe to admit it, like, when they were making the last Harry Potter movie, they told you, like, oh, yeah, it's too much. We got to spread it to two movies.
Yeah.
With Avengers. Oh, when we wrap up.
But I don't mind that.
But they didn't lead into that. Like, they didn't, didn't go into Spider-Verse knowing that this was the setup for another one. So it's kind of a little bummed about that, but, overall, I still enjoyed it.
Yeah.
These
movies can work if they take their time and do them properly, but they're getting to a point where they're just pressing them out so fast, the quality is starting to suck.
And
that's not what you want to do right now.
I think the movie going public just got a little bit of fatigued.
Yeah.
I have to plan on there's going to be three Marvel movies a year. At one point, they were talking about having three Star Wars movies a year.
Yeah.
And
that fills up the box office.
That's just those two, like, genres.
I don't think superhero movies are ever going to go away.
No.
They're always going to be here. But the point, the time of we need to crank these out as quick as we can, like the phase one for Marvel, phase two ended with, what phase ended with Endgame? Was that
three.
Phase three. All the way up till phase three was pretty much, I mean, it had some stinkers in there, but pretty much it was fantastic. But they really put their work into keeping all of that cohesive and joined. And then when they tried to do it again, it's just not working because the same people aren't behind it. And I think the idea of we need, you know, because for a while Disney had a license to print money there.
Oh, yeah.
And Warner Brothers' problem is Warner Brothers didn't jump on it soon enough. And Warner Brothers, we've had this conversation before, a bunch of old guys in rooms smoking cigars, you know.
See, that was...
It doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, that's the thing is
you Warner Brothers... You have a better, educated, smarter audience with this stuff, and you can't just cram this stuff down our throats and expect us to like it. It's not like the old days where you could put Michael Keaton in the old Batman costume and just, you know, throw this shit out there and, you know, people will go see it because it's Batman, you know, whatever. But it doesn't work that way anymore.
Yeah, and this is unfortunately not just happening to Comic-Con. What was the big gaming convention? E3.
Yeah, E3.
E3 is almost completely folded. Like, they've announced they're not doing an E3 this year. They said they might not try to do another E3 to like 2024, 2025.
Well, to be fair, E3 started getting ridiculous, where it was a bunch of stuff that wasn't video games, that didn't have any purpose being there. People were just there trying to cash in on the name of it. And a lot of people were like, this is dumb. This isn't video games. This is... Well,
but E3 wasn't always video games. It was electronic entertainment. So it was video games. It was computer hardware. It was anything that was technically computer entertainment.
There was stuff there that wasn't part of that, though.
Mm-hmm.
So...
But are we just seeing the end stage of the multimedia convention? Like, are we going to see where just the international super convention goes by the wayside and it goes back to local regional conventions?
For now, yes. And there's a lot of... Plus, also, there's money. Nobody has any money right now.
That is true.
Like, going to the movies, it's not cheap. You know, when we go, we always go, like, the super early shows. A, because I don't like going to a movie theater with a lot of people. It ruins it for me. And B, it's cheaper.
Oh, my God. After seeing... So, okay, yeah, I saw
plus
that.
Plus, we also, like, the Flash is coming out. Screw it. I'm going to wait till it comes on TV at home and watch it. I'm not paying... That's what people are doing more and more. If it gets any bad reviews at all, I'm going to wait, you know? So, that's the problem they're running into.
Yeah, I just, and I think that it also is that the regional conventions are themselves getting a better attraction. Like, before, it was Comic-Con, and then you had, like, New York City Comic-Con. So, like, you had the one on each coast. But now you've got Silicon Valley Comic-Con. That's a big draw.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the guys who used to be involved in the maker community are now part of Silicon Valley Comic-Con. So they're doing... In addition to, like, comic books and stuff, like, a lot of costuming stuff there. They're doing a lot of, like, model building stuff. Oh, my God. There's a... Adam Savage's Tested YouTube channel just visited the Model Builders Expo,
mm-hmm.
which is, like, all the guys who, like, build garage kits and stuff. And there's just so many amazing things they showcased on their channel. Like... guys who built like copies of Star Trek ships that are vaguely referenced in the show and like, oh yeah, here's a studio scale model of it I built in my garage.
Yeah, I'm really into that stuff. I hang out on those websites. Just that's one of my Star Trek things. Like, it's like every time there's a starship on there, I just know that somebody out there is going to like find out, even if it's just in the background, somebody's going to find all the information about that.
Well, the cool thing is I learned the Paramount is actually reaching out to the fan community, and I think it starts with like Star Trek Online, where Star Trek Online will have these ship build contests
mm-hmm.
where you can design the starship, and if like yours is the fan chosen, it makes it into the game, which can then catapult it to being in the show.
Canon, yeah.
So in Picard, which I haven't watched yet. But the new
Enterprise... Skip season two.
the new... And man, that's one I want to watch because it's John DeLance.
Well, watch all of them. Really, there's only three seasons. Watch all of them. My least favorite was season two. The third season was really good, but go ahead.
So in the end of Picard, they dub the new Enterprise, the Enterprise G,
mm-hmm.
And that was a fan-created design that was originally from the Star Trek Online game. And the guy who designed that, he was actually at this convention and had the studio-scale model he built of his design. Mm-hmm. And then they used that for, essentially, Paramount bought the model off of him to use in shooting Picard.
Paramount's doing something interesting. Personally, I don't think Paramount should have a network. I think they should just make content and sell it to other networks. But Paramount is, like, when they first started up the Paramount Network, it wasn't doing real good. That I know of, it's still not doing that great. But they tried launching the, I won't go into a big detail about it, but the Discovery show wasn't that great. But that launched Strange New Worlds, which is fantastic. And the last season of Picard, they did a really good job with all of these new characters in the show and setting up for something that they didn't intentionally want to set up. And the outcry from the fans was like, we want Seven of Nine to have her own show.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, you have the generation that grew up with Star Trek The Next Generation and DS9, and they don't necessarily really care about telling stories in the Star Trek The Original Series timeline. It's like, why aren't you continuing the Star Trek Next Gen timeline? Why aren't you continuing the DS9 timeline? Why aren't we, instead of going backwards to tell stories, why aren't we going forwards?
Well, Strange New Worlds is fantastic. I will go on record as saying that it's probably my favorite Star Trek show. It is really good, but
I mean, it's my favorite Star Trek show is still Lower Decks now.
I am a fan of that now as well, thanks to you. But so many people were outcrying for...
I'm sorry to cut you off. Yeah. Which now I have to watch Strange New World because they do a Strange New World Lower Deck crossover.
That hasn't come on yet, but really watch it. Strange New Worlds is really, really good. They did a fantastic job with it. Way better than I anticipated they would. But the problem is Paramount has too many Star Trek shows right now, and the fans really want this other Star Trek, the next generation Star Trek show to happen. And Paramount really doesn't have a space to be able or
in their
a budget
production
to do it.
Schedule, yeah.
So I think that's why that other cartoon just got axed, because they need to have room in the production schedule. The other thing is Paramount's like, we need people to watch our network. Let's give the people what they want, which is what they did with Strange New Worlds. The fans were the ones that said, hey, give this guy a show, give these people a show. And they did. And it's been overwhelming for them. So they were like, okay, that worked. And then everybody's like, okay, well, now we want this generation show. We want with Geordi LaForge's daughter, Seven of Nine. We want all these people. Plus, the door is open to bring back the next generation characters here and there and sprinkle it on there if they want to. They don't have to get obsessive. So Paramount's like, well, this is what we need to do to keep the network going. So let's do this. And they haven't announced it yet, but all they would say was, you know, because everybody was after the last season of Picard, it was like, so what's going to happen with this show? And Paramount didn't have an answer other than to say, yes, they actually had to go on Twitter and say, okay, fans, we have heard you. We hear you loud and clear. And that's all they're going to say because they don't have a plan yet, but they're scrambling to try to get this together. So, and again, it goes back to the thing with the conventions and all that. The whole industry is in this flux right now. Marvel, Disney is in the same flux. Star Wars is in that flux. Warner Brothers, good luck. You know what?
I think that's kind of hitting it right on the head. I think it's...
They're trying to refigure where they need to go and what they need to do.
Post-COVID, the paradigm has changed, and nobody's figured out what the new paradigm is yet. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be lower production value but easier to produce shows? Or is it going to be still high production value movies but less of them? But I think the key to it is going to be the networks can no longer wall themselves off from the fans.
Yeah.
They are going to have to not just acknowledge the fans, but directly engage with the fans. And that's something that, like, networks have always struggled with. Like, Comic-Con was where the networks and the movie studios went to engage with fans, but it was a once-a-year thing. And
yeah,
now,
but with social media and everything now, exactly, it's a different landscape.
It is. And the more intertwined we get with social media, the more we want, like, actors posting from the set stuff that's like on Twitter or whatever, mm-hmm, or God, whatever the hell the new one is.
Threads or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah. I have gone on Threads specifically just to make sure that OND, or Old Nerds Drinking at Threads, is secured for us. Other than that, I'm
probably never going to touch it. I barely touch the social media I have now outside of Facebook.
I mean, I'm a little bit on TikTok, and like I started for like 2 days, like people on TikTok talking about Threads this, Threads that. I'm like, what the fuck is this? I thought Threads was like a subscription clothing company.
Well, there was another one. It was Google Designers. There was another app out there called Threads. But Threads is a whole different story that we could go in. Because I'm not going to use Threads, but I love what's happening with it. I love that whole... This is where I sit back and eat popcorn and watch what's going on in the social media world.
Oh, my God. Like,
but back to the other thing.
The whole thing of like Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg having a steel cage match. Man, unless they're using Thunderdome rules and it's two men enter, one man leaves, I don't fucking care.
I don't care what rules they're fighting under. As long as they are out there fighting, I will watch. I don't care if it's boxing. I don't care what it is. I want to watch these two fight.
Yeah.
But going back to the other thing, though, I think the industry knows what's going on. And also, this is because of the writer's strike. That's one of the reasons why the writers went on strike, because of the shows being aired on Netflix and so forth.
So
contracts work different.
Yes, it goes back to what we were talking about. Essentially, why IATSE almost went on strike was because when streaming first became a thing, they negotiated a two-tier contract. It's like, okay, if you want us to do work for television shows and movies, it is at this pay scale. Mm-hmm. If you want us to do work on streaming shows, because they're kind of a smaller industry, we will accept a lower contract rate. Well, what happened was it switched to the point where movie companies like Netflix were spending the same budget on streaming as they were on blockbuster movies. And IATSE went, hey, if you're dumping all this money into it, you can afford to pay us because we're doing the same amount of work as if we were on a blockbuster movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Netflix said, no, it's streaming. You got to use the streaming rate. And IATSE says, fuck you, no.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's happening with the writer's strike, is the writers are being paid on this streaming rate, and these shows are getting canceled so fast that they don't have an opportunity to, like, you know, get a full-time contract with a show, because it's like, hey, pitch us this show, okay? We'll make an episode of it, and then we'll pay you for that one episode. And, oh, okay, that one episode did good. Now we're going to pay somebody else to write a series.
Yeah. And then the series, like Bebop, it didn't even make it through the whole season, and they were like, well, we're canceling it. Swamp Thing, another great example. That didn't make it through the whole season. It got canceled. All mm-hmm. of these shows, for whatever reason, and as, what's the guy that me and you like to watch?
Adam Conover.
Yeah. He brought up a point. He was like, okay, so next time you go to watch your favorite show and you like it and it gets canceled after one season and they won't reveal why, because they're how they monitor their
well, it's what we've been trying to figure out for years, is like, what is the metric that streaming services use to determine whether or not a show is of like a success? And they won't do it. They don't want to release like the mythical stats. And it's like, why don't you? Why wouldn't you want to give the audiences the knowledge of, like, here's what we can do to, if we like this show, make it succeed?
Yeah, and their attitude is just watch it. It's like, okay, because, like, I quit watching. I loved Bebop. I loved the live action. It wasn't the cartoon, but I didn't care. I knew what I was getting into, and I loved it. And they announced that it was over with. They weren't renewing it. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to finish watching it.
That's exactly what happened to me. I got like a few episodes in. They announced it wasn't getting renewed. And it's like, well, then I don't care.
Yeah. So I think that's the lens. Everybody knows the direction it's going. So.
The other thing that I am just fucking done with is this idea of the scarcity of digital media. Like this idea that, hey, we as a studio are going to write this thing off as a loss. And thus, even though we own it, even though we paid for it, even though you want to watch it, we are going to pull it from our subscription mm-hmm. service and you can never watch it again.
Disney's been really good about that. I'll note that with Disney Plus.
Well, in fact, Disney did the opposite. They're like, hey, you want to pay for our streaming service? Here's fucking everything.
Yeah, and they continuously add more to it,
like,
all the time.
Like, you want to watch The Wonderful World of Disney from, like, the 1980s? Here you go. Here's Pollyanna. Here's, like, fucking The Cat from Outer Space. Have at. Go nuts. Yeah.
They did it right. And that was what everybody, I was expecting everybody else to do the same thing. But like,
it seems like every time I go on HBO Max, it's like, well, yes, I am excited. They finally put Mythbusters on and I've been watching the shit out of that. And then they added How It's Made, which is one of my favorite shows of all time. They took off all but the most recent season of Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. They took off Westworld.
Wow. Yeah. Really?
Westworld is gone.
Why?
It is not on the streaming service anymore. Because reasons. They haven't said why, but it's like, this was one of the flagship shows of HBO Max.
That's like taking off Game of Thrones.
And that's conceivably at some point, we might lose Game of Thrones. But it's like, it's costing you nothing. You own this property.
Less server space, but...
Yeah, like, why are you taking it off? And it's like, that is going to cost you to lose viewers and subscriptions.
I wonder if they're trying to do what Disney used to do with The Vault.
Oh my God, the Disney Vault.
The Disney Vault. Yeah, I wonder if that's what they're trying to do with it, which if it is, it's dumb. Like, that's more of a reason... Like, when DC tried to do their whole thing in the beginning, they were like, yeah, you're going to be able to watch all the DC shows and movies, and we're going to have comic books online. The problem was they didn't have enough content. So, like, that's one of the reasons, like, Paramount, I'm actually going to get the Paramount Network because there's a good amount of stuff on there now. But when I subscribe to a service, the first thing that goes through my head is, how much dollar value am I going to get out of paying this bill once a month? Is there enough content on there for me to warrant paying this?
Oh, my God, do you remember when Stargate tried to run their own just Stargate streaming service?
Why?
Yeah,
it's like... apparently there's a 21 Jump Street network that's nothing but 21 Jump Street.
Okay, so no, that is under the umbrella of Shout Factory.
Mm-hmm.
So Shout Factory will buy license to like all these old TV shows, and then they'll run a streaming channel that just runs that TV show on a 24-hour break. They do that with MST3K. So like you can go on Shout Factory TV, you can go on Twitch, you can go on like any TV, and there is a 24-hour streaming channel that just shows old episodes of MST3K.
And I'm just finding out about this now.
I've mentioned it like 5 times.
I know, but I never listen to what you tell me. How many people are out there laughing at me saying that right now?
Yeah. Because, yeah, that's one of the things I watch when I'm at my workbench painting miniatures. If there's not a good Twitch painting streamer on that I want to watch, I'll watch MST3K reruns.
Have to keep that in the back pocket for possible future use.
Mm-hmm.
As we start to get into the middle of summer here for backyard movie streaming night.
Oh, yeah. Now, I found out about something today. And... One of the first things that we ever came up with that was like one of the kernels of us starting this podcast was the idea of the Muppet a movie.
Yeah, we haven't talked about any of that kind of stuff in a little while. I was thinking about that a while
ago. I just found out, let me pull this back up.
We got away from the movie thing too, but
so
Dune 2 looks fantastic, and I will. God, that's a movie that I would love to see on the big screen.
I will probably go. I hope they do it the same. I hope they do it the same way, where they release it the same day on HBO Max, because I'd love to do it the same way, where I watched it at home to get the plot and to get that, and then I went to the movies and I could just be gobsmacked by how beautiful the movie was.
Yeah.
The Phoenix Theaters in Wayne, or Phoenix Theater Company in Wayne, Michigan, is performing the Rocky Horror Puppet Show.
I can totally see that happening there. I've seen Rocky Horror Picture Show at that theater many times.
Friends, what is literally the only way to make the Rocky Horror Picture Show better? Showcast it with puppets and tiny props. So damn it, Janet, that's just what we'll do. Join us for our first ever Rocky Horror Puppet Show. Don't dream it, be it. The cult classic Rocky Horror Picture Show is here to stay. Join the Michigan Rocky Horror Preservation Society in the return of the Shadowcast experience of Rocky Horror Picture Shows.
When is this?
This is Saturday, July 22nd.
And I won't be here.
Oh my God.
I would totally go. We would get the gang together if possible and go. It would be awesome. Somebody else would have to drive for me though.
Oh yeah,
I know. I would have to be.
And the best part is, so like, the splash image for their Facebook page is the scene where Dr. Scott comes through the wall with the wheelchairs, but it's Statler and Waldorf in the wheelchairs.
Man, I'm not going to be here for it, I don't think.
So I figure we should dust it off. Let's Muppet the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, man, on such short notice. Okay, I'll give it a shot. Brad and Janet, what do you want to start?
I am going to go out on a limb. And, you know, the typecast is always going to be, oh, well, it's going to be Kermit and Miss Piggy.
For Brad and Janet. Yeah, that seems like this is a good fit.
No, fuck that shit. Brad, Sam the Bald Eagle.
No.
100%. He is the uptight. Like, the first half of the movie. Like, just Brad Majors has to be Sam the Bald Eagle.
I don't think so.
Yep, Sam the Bald Eagle.
I don't know where I'd put Sam.
Or?
The doctor. Sam would be the doctor in the wheelchair, in my opinion.
No. Like, the doctor in the wheelchair has to be Statler and Waldorf.
Yeah, but that's two characters.
But it doesn't matter. They did the same thing with the Muppet Christmas Carol. Jacob Marley was one character, but for the Muppet version, it's Statler and Waldorf.
I mean, I could see, like, the band being, like, Riff Raff and Magenta and...
No, I'm saying Kermit and Miss Piggy as Riff Raff and Magenta.
Oh, I don't know.
Because especially, like, how catty Magenta gets sometimes. Like, you just... I think that is more Miss Piggy than having Miss Piggy as Janet.
Then who plays Meatloaf?
So here, I believe, like, either you gotta have Meatloaf be Dr. Teeth, or you gotta have Meatloaf...
Okay, that's a good pick.
Yeah.
Meatloaf would be the one human actor, but Dr. Teeth would be a great... Yeah, that's a perfect pick.
I'm gonna say Dr. Teeth. I'm gonna say Rolf is the criminologist. Because Rolf is the one competent Muppet. He's the one Muppet who's good at the one thing he wants to be good at, and that's good enough for him. So I think Rolf is the criminologist. I would say the controversial pick is, who are we going to have for Dr. Frankenfurter? Because I honestly believe Frankenfurter's got to be the human.
Gonzo.
No. I would see Gonzo maybe as Rocky even, but I think Frankenfurter's got to be the human. Either that or Janet's got to be the human.
I'm still going to stick with Miss Piggy and Kermit. I would maybe even leave Brad as Brad.
Barry Bostwick, yeah, he kind of owns the role.
Yeah,
but
I mean, the two people that own the role in that movie the most would be Dr. Frankenfurter and Brad.
But can I just, like, Sam the Bald Eagle performing the floor show?
It was great when it all began.
No, I can't see it.
No, that's not his. That's not Brad's part. Brad's part is,
it's beyond me. Help me, mommy.
Yes, you are listening to this right now. This is actually happening.
Yeah. Nope. I'm still standing by Sam the Bald Eagle.
That's okay. You're allowed to do that. I disagree with you, though. I will respectfully disagree. I would see Sam as the criminologist.
But that's the thing. It's like that would be the go-to, the easy pick. And we're not going with the easy picks.
I don't know.
I think it's more zany when it's not the easy pick.
The only one I'm agreeing with is Animal so far. I'm sorry.
That's it. Animal's got to be Rocky.
Yeah, Animal. Yeah. Well, no.
Yeah, Animal's got to be Rocky.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Animal can be Rocky. Yeah, that'll work. Yeah.
I mean, like, you got to go back to Muppets Take Manhattan when, like, Animal's running around going, Woman.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that would be a decent pick. Yeah.
Okay. So now, okay.
Riff Raff. Do I pick Riff Raff?
Well, my Riff Raff is Kermit.
I can't do it. I can't do Riff Raff as Kermit. I can't. I just can't. I can't see it.
I mean, it's literally the same role he plays in the Muppet Show, where he's the major domo. He's the curator.
He's not dark enough. Riff Raff was like dark and creepy, and Kermit's just not dark and creepy.
I would say, but who are you going to have to play Columbia?
Oh, that what was the hippie chick from the band?
Janice.
Janice. Yeah, Janice would be her.
Okay, yeah, I could see Janice.
Yeah, Janice could be her. Yeah. See, the problem is there's not a lot of females on the Muppets. So you're kind of getting limited. That's why I was thinking, like, Gonzo for Dr. Frankenfurter, because you could have the chickens playing off-the-wall parts,
okay,
too.
Okay, so here is the thing. The whole reason I got on this a couple of days ago with a friend was, like, we were talking about, like, if you had to replace Tim Curry in Rocky Horror Picture Show and do a modern version of it, who would you have play Frankenfurter?
A modern version? Like, I don't know.
Because as much as I love Tim Curry, unfortunately, Tim Curry is not at a point in his physical health where he could do Frankenfurter.
I don't think he's going to be around much longer either.
I
don't know. I don't know who would we have to do that.
Hear me out.
You'd need somebody very flamboyant.
Little Nas X.
I am completely unfamiliar with Little Nas X.
So he is a performer. I do not know.
I know he's a performer.
Well, I do not know any of his songs, but I know he did like this really like flamboyantly sexual video, and all the Jesus people really freaked out about it. And I have seen, like, he definitely pulls off the, like, gender fluid queerness.
Mm-hmm.
What little I've seen of him, I think he could do it. My other choice, I don't know if he's still doing anything right now. What if we get Chris Tucker a la Ruby Rod?
Chris Tucker, maybe.
Like we get him to go full Ruby Rod as Frankenfurter.
Yeah, I think he could pull it off. I think he could pull it. But Chris Tucker Chris Tucker we have today isn't the same as Chris. He became a born again Christian, and that's why he doesn't. Well, he's still around, but the way he acts now in the movies, he's very different.
I just thought it was
if it was old Chris Tucker, if it was Fifth Element Chris Tucker.
The Rush Hour kind of,
yeah.
Like, okay, we made four of these. I think we can finally let it go now.
Yeah, I think Chris Tucker could pull it off. Yeah. Because I was just thinking in my head, I'm like, if it was made nowadays, they would swap out and make it a black person or whatever. But if they did, Chris Tucker would be the one to pull it off. I could totally see him doing it. Yeah.
I don't think they could
remake Rocky Horror, though.
I
just don't think they could.
I don't know if his singing chops are good enough, but you know, Elliot Page is out there. If you're gonna have a queer person do it, I mean, portray a queer person, get a queer person to do it.
Yeah, that would be the thing. Like, if you're
I don't know if he. I don't know how he sings. It's honestly the only thing. I mean,
I just don't think you could to go into that territory. It's not even. I don't think you could do
so
it.
So if we were gonna do a Muppet, I would say Gonzo has to be Frankenfurter. Like he's just. He's just got that weirdness. Gonzo is Frankenfurter.
Yeah. Yeah, I could go with that.
Maybe Sweetums is Riff Raff?
Yeah, maybe.
But I still say...
What about Sam the Bald Eagle is Riff Raff?
No.
He's already bald.
No. Like...
He's already,
but that's
like...
the thing. Like, the whole core being of Sam's character is that he is the straight-laced, uptight... He is literally the embodiment of American symbolism.
I know that, but because Riff Raff was, you know,
Nope, never mind. Crazy Harry is Riff Raff.
Who's Crazy Harry?
Crazy Harry is the Muppet that blows everything up.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
He's even got the laugh.
Maybe. I'm having a hard time. I don't know. Again, this was thrown at me with short notice, Maybe. I'd have to see it. Like I'm going to see this happen, right, you know? So
right, it's one of those things. But so for sure...
You know what you should do? Since AI is a thing now, and you can do AI-generated images, I really think you should try to sit down and do that image of Rocky Horror Picture Show with Muppets. Not right now, you know. You're allowed to go, because you can go in and use ChatGPT and use that. But now, at this point, there's so many
I was going to say, and everything literally, now. I just did it, and there's like five that came up as sponsored.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I've seen AI-generated Muppet Mad Max.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen AI-generated Muppet Hellraiser. So it's out there. But
yeah.
So my cast, I'm going to say we're going to get... I'm still going with Sam the Bald Eagle as Brad. We still haven't come... Okay, that's it. We'll get a Muppet to do Frankenfurter, and then we'll have the human be Janet.
Yeah.
I think the human definitely needs to be Janet.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I would still say that Brad should be Kermit. I just can't. I just.
Oh my God, Anna Kendrick as Janet. Yes.
That look of dementedness you just got in your eyes was
first of all,
scary.
I love Anna Kendrick. She is just a... I mean, I don't know her in real life, but every interview I've seen of her, she just seems like a wonderful, funny person. Like, she is one of those, like, actors I would just love to, like, go and have a beer with. She's funny in all of her social medias, and, like, I love almost all the movies she's in. We'll give her a pass. She was in Twilight. Like, everybody needs to do something to get a paycheck. but, like... I could absolutely see Anna Kendrick as Janet.
Mm-hmm.
So Anna Kendrick as Janet, Sam the Bald Eagle as Brad. We're going Gonzo as Frankenfurter, Dr. Teeth as the Meatloaf, Eddie. And that makes sense having Columbia be Janice, because Janice was in love with Eddie.
Yeah.
Rolf is the criminologist, Animal as Rocky, Miss Piggy as Magenta. I still haven't come up with somebody for Riff Raff though. Oh yeah. See, I don't think Crazy Harry's got the range to do Riff Raff.
There is no range to Crazy. blow it up.
Ooh, you know what? Let's have Rizzo be Riff Raff.
Rizzo could work.
Rizzo
the Rat would work. Yeah.
Rizzo the Rat is Riff Raff.
Yeah, Rizzo would work. Rizzo would work. That'd be fine. So there you go.
There's my cast.
There's your cast. I don't agree with all of them, but, you know, I still want Animal as Rocky, though.
No. Well, yeah, that was my cast. It was
okay,
Animal as Rocky.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
I thought you said
Dr. Teeth for whatever reason.
No, Dr. Teeth is Eddie, and then Statler and Waldorf as Dr. Scott.
I want Animal as Rocky. I want Animal as Rocky. Because Rocky doesn't, he's like, woman, you know, that's...
The only lines Rocky has are sung. When he sings The Sword of Damocles and when he sings The Floor Show.
Yeah.
Those are the only time he talks.
And Animal's not going to be able to sing.
Well.
Unless they just make a farce of it and just throw him out. La, 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 la.
No, it was, well, just like the original Rocky Horror, you'd have somebody dub over him singing.
Yeah.
But I think that would actually be funnier, as we're so used to Animal, and then all of a sudden it's like, The Sword of Damocles is hanging over my head.
Yeah. Yeah, that would work. That would work.
Oh, see, and it works even, like, because we could have the unconventional conventioneers just be all the rats.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. The rats, because the rats are the chickens, either one of them.
Oh, rats and chickens. There we go.
Yeah, we could do either or. That'd be fun.
Oh, no, wait. Nope, I take it back. The unconventional conventioneers have to be the penguins because they're all wearing tuxedos.
I may be back by next Saturday. I may be back by the 22nd from out of town.
I don't know if I can get off work to do it. But if I could, man, I really
it would only be fun if we got the gang to go, or a majority of the gang. It would only be really fun that way. And I would definitely need to be chaperoned.
Somebody's definitely going to have to be the designated driver on that one.
We would definitely have to have a designated driver.
Or it's like, It's like when you get a bunch of stoners to go see Fantasia, you got to have the one straight person who can pull everybody out.
You got
to
have ground control, because I would definitely be on a 20 milligram resin gummy for that, for absolute certainty. Absolutely.
Absolute certainty.
Yeah. But yeah, we should probably wrap it up.
Okay, we'll save 10th edition talk for another time.
Yeah, because that's gonna be a whole topic unto of itself. Because I downloaded all those games off the Steam sale. That I've got a computer that can play this stuff, I've stepped my foot back into the Warhammer 40K world.
Oh man, I gotta figure out how we can go head to head on BattleTech.
I gotta play it more. I literally didn't make it through the first mission, and I haven't gone back and touched it since. I fell into Valheim.
Oh, dude, I will let you know right now. If you're playing the campaign, skew your mechs towards being heat neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Like, have less guns, but be heat neutral and have more armor, because you will be incredibly more survivable. Because that first turn where you have to, like, not shoot because you're cooling, you're just going to get wrecked.
Yeah.
Like, just be dishing out damage.
It's been
years
since I've played. So, I think energy weapons generate more heat than ballistic ones?
They do.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, there are certain mechs that are made to alpha strike. It's like, oh, I got a shit ton of weapons. And, like, the King Crab comes with 2 AC-20s, 2 large lasers, an LRM-10, and I think, like, a couple of medium lasers. There's no way you can fire all that stuff at once, but it's designed to, okay, you're firing the LRM-15s at long range, and then when something gets closer, well, it's like, no, I got a designated mech I'm using for the missiles, so just fuck off those LRM-15s, and then the only thing I put on a King Crab are 2 AC-20s, 2 medium lasers, a shit ton of ammo, and armor.
I'll get to it eventually.
And it's just so good.
I downloaded like 7 games. So, you know, I'm just kind of working. I'll play one till I get bored with it, and I'll jump to the next one, then I'll jump to the next one. I'll get to it eventually. So.
Yeah, I have thus far managed to avoid buying more games on the Steam sale. Because as what happens is, like, I'll be like, oh man, this game looks great. Oh man, this game looks great. And now I have a Steam library with like 300 games in it.
Same boat.
And I play 5 of them.
Yep, same boat.
It's like, oh yeah, I've got 300 games, but I also have 1,000 hours into Fallout 4.
Mm-hmm.
I have probably close to 1,000 hours into BattleTech.
See, I've barely touched it. Once I fell into Valheim, I just kept playing that. So anyways, yeah, let's wrap it up and get this done. So.
All right, well, yeah.
Plus my legs are dying here.
And I'm just about out of beer, so... You did say you recorded your first episode of Archivist in a while.
Yeah, we recorded last week. I'm not sure how soon the show is going to be out. And it was my friend Stephanie Quick, who's been on a few other shows, well, many shows at this point, and AP Strange, who is kind of a librarian of the strange. And we finally stuck our toe into the strange Elvis world. And we went far weird into the Elvis world. Elvis UFO cults, Elvis as an alien hybrid. It was all in good fun, though, just talking about all these weird people that have covered Elvis in different ways and different belief systems and religions that have been built up around Elvis.
There's an urban fantasy book series I started reading by an author by the name of R.S. Belcher. And the first book was The Brotherhood of the Wheel. And in that book series, Elvis is in it as a demon. He sold his soul at the crossroads, and now he's like a half demon. He like found a way out of his contract.
That was one of the things we brought up in the show, was you have Elvis as the person, Elvis as the entertainer, and then the directions that people took Elvis after he died.
Oh, there
you've
was
got
a,
Bubba Hotep.
There's a Netflix series where it's like...
He's a secret agent. Yeah. All these different things. And then like that, there's all these different things that people have taken. Like Elvis has become something greater and gone into different directions. That was one of the things I was telling, like when me and you were talking about having an AI write us some kind of a short story script.
Well,
we were thinking about doing it. Each of us would bring a couple of characters to the table, and one of them was going to be Elvis.
There's actually a word for it, and I cannot remember where it is, where it's a person becomes essentially a god because they are granted in the public consciousness. They're elevated, like, as a demigod above, because people think about them and people tell stories about them, and they become... A folk, essentially I don't even know what...
That's what I brought up in the show about how I compare it to Neil Gaiman's American Gods.
And it's basically that idea.
How there's like 20 different kinds of Jesus in there because everybody believes in Jesus in their own way. Well, Elvis would be the same way. You would have this realm of different Elvises.
So, okay.
Elvi. What would be a herd of Elvis called?
I'm not sure.
A herd of Elvis?
Yeah. There's a... Elvi? There's a TikTok channel, or there's a TikTok creator I follow. It's Latinos Against Spooky Shit. And he's a Latino fellow, and he talks about, like, people will send him these videos of, like, strange, like, things out in the woods. And he's like, nah, man. He's like, if you saw it, no, you didn't.
There's an African-American guy that I follow. Yeah, same way.
But he's like, what you're going to do is you're going to go get yourself a chancla. You're going to dip it in Vicks Vapor Rub. You're going to get your ethnically correct Jesus candle.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, that's coming. I'm not real sure. I'm just now getting the new computer fired up, and I'm running it through its paces. And that show was a big test to say, okay, how is this thing going to work with recording, and how is it going to handle the recording program? And so far, it's doing great. It's a fantastic computer. So once I get this edited out of the way, then I'm going to sit down and start actually, like, booking. You know, I want to do a Fast Food Follies show, which listeners of my show, if you've heard of the Fast Food Follies episodes, you know what those are, where we collect really random, crazy, fast food-oriented stories.
Oh, my daughter on a road trip just experienced her first Waffle House.
Mm-hmm.
She said it was a transformative experience.
How old is she?
She'll be 14 in 2-3 weeks.
And she's already grasping the concept of transformative experience.
Apparently. I mean, you know, the kids got the TikToks nowadays. They're learning all kinds of fun stuff. She showed me a video today. She's like, hey, Dad, do you know about this? And it's some guy on TikTok talking about Simu Heha. And I'm like, not only do I know about this, I know enough to know he's mispronouncing his name and not attributing things to him correctly. I have books.
Fantastic. So, yeah, that's what's been going on there. And, you know, I'm going to get those gears turning again here pretty soon. I'm working on it. So it'll, you know, it's strange sitting down. It's weird because I haven't touched an editing program or anything in 10 months or something like that. And it's muscle memory. Like, I sit down and I'm like, okay, do this, click that, click this, move this here, split this that way. You know, well, it's the same thing with you. You know, if you haven't touched it for a while, it's amazing how it still implants into your head.
It's, because, God, it's been about a month since I put out an episode. So
a month.
You're like, oh, my sweet summer child.
So, you know.
But it was great having you back on. It was great getting back to recording. Again, during the summer, we might get a little hit or miss on episodes.
Well, there's just so much going on, man. Yeah. There's
And, you know, our listeners are on vacation.
You know. It's just so crazy. You've got shows, and plus you want to go out and do stuff, and... You know, winter, it's different. You're stuck indoors. You can't go to the beach. You can't go to the park. You can't. You can't go to that orgy that's happening in the woods somewhere. You know, it's you know, it's just how it is. We're bug spray. But anyways,
we didn't even get to talk about the dumbasses who went down to the Titanic and increased the Titanic's death count like 111 years after its sinking.
Yeah, we'll get there.
We'll get there. All right. But anyways, I am John Patrick, the Master Control Program,
and I am Rogan.
And end of lunch. Oh. As a last aside, last week was the anniversary of Tron.
Yes, it was. Yes.
So,
a couple of days ago, as of this recording, 2 days ago.
Hold on. Tron.
40th anniversary.
It was the 40th?
Yeah, I believe it was the 40th anniversary.
1982, so it would have been the 41st anniversary.
I'd totally be down for loading that up for a bad movie night in the backyard. If you want to come by some night, it's just me and you, we could watch it.
So right before we sign off, last week was the 41st anniversary of Tron. You posted something about it. I sat down that night and watched it. And you know what? It's still a damn good movie.
You know, when I was a kid and saw that movie, the special effects and stuff just blew me away because it wasn't like any movie that had been made before.
And you want to know what the crazy thing is? Like now as an adult... They blow me away more because you realize what they were doing with the technology they had at the time.
Yeah.
And like how they had to do stuff. And it's just like, man, this is even more incredible.
Yeah, they had to create the... That's why... It's the same reason why I like Rush and Pink Floyd and all those bands. Because when they were doing that stuff in the studio, they didn't have the technology. They had to create the technology to make that kind of music. Same thing with this movie. It was like, we want to do this. And say what you will about Disney. Disney is really good... at pushing boundaries and pushing, right. you know, and creating new technology to do these kinds of things.
Yeah.
They've always been a company that way. Like with the Mandalorian and that wraparound screen and stuff, they still do it today, but they're always a company that pushes boundaries to do these crazy things. And like at the time it was like, yeah, they're probably using a black light or whatever, but there was so much more to the computer generated graphics were way ahead of their time.
Yeah. And, so, and it's just the costuming. The, yeah. Like, the fact that most of it was filmed on green screens and matte paintings.
Exactly. Is, yeah. And the idea of, like, we're going to make a movie that takes place inside of a computer world.
Oh, and not to mention, hand animating most of the, like, mm-hmm. effects onto thing. Like, yeah. So, in honor of that, as we close every show.
End of line.
Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Hell no!
German? Forget it, he's rolling.
It ain't over now.
So, what's the plan? Take car, go to Mum's, kill Phil,
sorry,
grab Liz, go to the Winchester, have a nice cold pint, and wait for all this to blow over.
Might as well write them off.
Let's close up the bridge. Let's get out of here. Close it up. Lights out.
Where are you headed, cowboy?
Nowhere special.
Nowhere special. I always wanted to go there.
We're going streaking!
Disperse! Nothing to see here, please!